Exxon's exploitation of Chad's oil involves both engineering audacity and big ideas about how to relieve poverty in Africa. To reach global markets, Exxon formed a consortium to build a 660-mile pipeline across Cameroon's forests to the town of Kribi on the Atlantic Ocean. From there, it would pipe the oil an additional 7 miles to an offshore marine terminal. To ensure that the project met global standards for the management of oil revenue and involved credible plans to relieve Chad's poverty, Exxon enlisted the World Bank, a Washington-headquartered institution funded by rich countries to support economic development in poor countries. During the mid-1990s, Exxon and the bank conceived an unprecedented model. In exchange for loans from the World Bank's finance arm, Chad's government would be pressured to accept covenants requiring that it spend most of the royalties and taxes it received from oil production on health services, education, economic infrastructure, and other poverty alleviation programs. To ensure that Idriss Déby or others in his government did not cheat, the plan would require that Exxon route Chad's oil money through special bank accounts in London controlled by the World Bank. For a cautious company run mainly by engineers, the Chad project's terms amounted to an extraordinary venture by Exxon into social engineering and nation building. There was something about the starkness of Chad's poverty that seemed to attract Exxon's engineers. They talked about the country as a place that could be entirely remade. "We have an opportunity of applying this model on a clean slate," explained Tom Walters, the corporation's vice president for oil development in Africa. "There was no prior history of development to deal with." Foreign missionaries of an earlier era imagined that they might improve Africa by imbuing its people with Christian values of work and rectitude. Exxon's managers believed they might improve Chad's government by demonstrating through their own example the benefits of corporate discipline and principled consistency, the gospel of the Operations Integrity Management System, or OIMS. "A big part of what we think we can bring is a lot of the ethical behavior that we can portray to the government," Walters said. "We have been working with this government now for a good 10 years, and we do not back down. And I think that education is going to have dividends over the long haul." Rex W. Tillerson, who was rising to prominence as a leader in the corporation's international division, described the project as a clean sheet of paper where Exxon had the opportunity to put things in place perhaps the way you'd like to see them carried out from the very beginning. The corporation's ambition in Chad stood in contrast to its modest local development projects and political quietude, bordering on complicity, in Equatorial Guinea. The difference had more to do with oil market geography than with any deep-seated desire within ExxonMobil to reform Africa. The corporation's Equatorial Guinea properties lay offshore and could be shipped to markets without much need for ExxonMobil employees to involve themselves in the country, except to go and come from the airport. As long as Obiang's rule was stable, ExxonMobil could keep a low profile and pump oil. In Chad, the corporation's oil was stranded inland. Constructing a pipeline to the Atlantic Ocean inevitably meant the political visibility and risks of the project would be elevated. Land acquisition, population resettlement, cutting down trees, and environmental protection plans were sure to attract local and international scrutiny from the start. By recruiting the World Bank as a partner, Exxon's leaders shrewdly insulated themselves from many of the project's most daunting reputational risks, particularly those arising from the objections of environmentalists and non-governmental organizations. The World Bank's technocratic experts in poverty alleviation and development, not the oil corporation, would design and implement the plan to manage Chad's oil revenue as a public trust. The notion that ExxonMobil should be telling the government of Chad how to spend its money, like Shell telling the UK government how to spend its money, wouldn't go down well, Lee Raymond observed. The World Bank, however, had the mandate. "The biggest thing this company can bring to some of these countries is the opportunity to see capitalism and the free market work," he said on another occasion. "Am I comfortable with everything the government of Chad does? No. Am I comfortable with the concept that we're now going to give the Chadian people an opportunity to improve their lot through economic development? Extremely comfortable." The project's New Jerusalem ambitions reflected the World Bank's evolving priorities. President Clinton had appointed James Wolfensohn, a multi-talented Australian investment banker, cellist, and fencer, as the bank's president. Wolfensohn inherited an institution under increasing criticism from European board members and anti-poverty campaigners for its historical reliance on the financing of large infrastructure projects, dams, highways, and the like, that did little to stimulate private investment or meet the human needs of poor people. Wolfensohn traveled the world seeking new ideas to address these concerns. The Chad Revenue Management Plan presented an opportunity to experiment with a new conditional lending model. It became the child of James Wolfensohn, recalled Jane Geyer, an anthropologist who advised the bank. Exxon seemed an unlikely corporate partner for a nation-building project of such visibility and ambition. Lee Raymond, however, had confidence in Wolfensohn. In his earlier career as an Australian merchant banker, Wolfensohn had worked with Raymond on some of Exxon's oil and gas deals in the region. Later, as Exxon's chief executive, Raymond looked at the Chad property and realized there were only three choices. Do nothing with the oil, which would be unfortunate, ship it north through Libya, which looked impossible politically, or sign up to the World Bank's plan to improve governance and raise living standards in two very poor countries. Why not try?